Hello, everyone. Welcome to American Copyright. Will Government Go Too Far? My name is Katie Sundstrom. I am an attorney out of Houston. I do a lot. I work a lot with copyrights and trademarks and general media-related compliance issues, things like that. And we're going to go around and introduce ourselves before we really start getting into the discussion.
Okay, I'm David Sneed. I'm an attorney in Washington, D.C., and I represent Internet infrastructure providers, and I'm also one of the co-founders of the Internet Infrastructure Coalition that also is known as Save Hosting and was one of the entities that participated opposing SOPA and PIPA.
My name is Jonathan Bailey. I am a copyright and plagiarism consultant. I work with attorneys, not one myself, but I deal with things like content tracking, content analysis, and also helping understand how content's being used and in certain cases enforcing it and understanding basically how clients can make the best use of whatever it is they're creating.
My name is Mark Petrolis. I'm an attorney with Mudd Law Offices. I'm focused primarily on internet and cyber law, which deals with not only intellectual property issues but also privacy issues and other torts like defamation. And I have probably about 10 to 15% of my practices, the mass BitTorrent defendant cases are copyright troll cases.
So attorney, consultant, attorney, layman.
that guy.
So my name is Patrick O'Keefe. I run the iFroggy Network. It's a network of websites that I own and operate. I've been managing online communities for 12 years, wrote the book Managing Online Forums, and I speak from the perspective of someone who manages social spaces where people can post content without pre-moderation and sometimes use those powers to violate copyright.
All right. Thanks, y'all. So the reason why we're sitting here today is because this week, last year at South by Southwest, I was, much like yourselves, sitting in an audience watching some lawyers and some other people talk about copyright law. And I looked down on Twitter, and the White House has released this white paper giving the administration's recommendations for more stringent measures to help prevent copyright infringement, criminal copyright infringement. Now, that's not what was alarming to me. What was alarming to me, it needs to be updated because there's new technologies have come. There's streaming that is now getting into the mix that isn't fully represented in the criminal part of the code. But what was alarming to me was that the administration also recommended wiretapping. And wiretapping to monitor criminal copyright infringement. And, if you're talking about a real mass infringement happening, then I can see that too, but the problem is the people on the other end of that are us. It's us. And so when we're going to show up and the results of this wiretapping, the paper, and I don't know if this is what would have happened, but the paper seem to recommend to actually, and I think you would have to, share the results of your investigation, share the results of the law enforcement's investigation with the rights holders so that you could see, is it really infringement, stuff like that. So that's really scary to me. It gets into privacy issues with the users. And then that got me thinking about how are the common user, maybe the small business owner that's putting content on the web, how are they being affected by copyright law now? And how can we change laws when we are going out and changing laws and making new legislation, can we be mindful of that? And so I started asking myself those questions, and then I got all these people together so that I could ask them their opinion. So my first question is for Mark Petrolis. So how do you think copyright law today is affecting the average person, and where does consumer privacy intersect with policing copyright infringement?
Yeah, I think, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of copyright troll cases going on, and I think it's going to touch a lot of the people here. But before I go into that, I don't know how familiar the audience is with the Sony BMG v. Tenenbaum case. This was a case coming from the RIAA type cases of suing people who downloaded music from Kazaa or LimeWire. The defendant was found liable for infringing 30 songs, basically. The jury awarded $675,000 in damages. Right now, I think Katie alluded to it, copyright law is behind the times. It historically has been that way, you know, since, you know, the birth of this country. You know, statutory damages for willful infringement can make a person liable up to $150,000 per infringement. Even non-willful infringement can get you $30,000. And in that case, you know, the Court of Appeals affirmed that decision. And I think there's constitutional issues that are at play there. Under the Constitution, you know, the song maybe was worth, you know, a couple of dollars, and, you know, it's so much more than that. And, you know, if the courts are going to allow for this, are you going to get more of the trolling type cases? And that gets to my next point, and this will get to kind of like the consumer privacy, is probably over the last 2 years, there's been the Hurt Locker case, which started out with, you know, producers of movies suing BitTorrent users, and then, and maybe producers is not the right term, they form companies and with the law firms, and I think the panel can get a little bit more into that, where basically they're monitoring BitTorrent and they're naming people in huge lawsuits, and when I mean huge, there could be like 23,000 defendants at a time, and basically they're setting up a business model where they're trying to leverage settlement, and how it works is they get IP addresses from BitTorrent, and then in federal court they move for expedited discovery where they're asking the court, we just want to subpoena the ISPs, find out who these people are, and proceed from there. And then, you know, people get a letter from the ISP, hey, you've been subpoenaed, you got 30 days to fight this. Or even some ISPs, the smaller ones won't even alert their customers. And, you know, up to 250,000 people have been a part of this. They're scared. And they're ending up, you know, settling for a couple thousand dollars or more. And, you know, given this, you know, this time, you know, that's a lot of money. And they're very concerned with, you know, why isn't my ISP fighting this? You know, I have no money to fight this. I didn't do anything wrong. A lot of the times it's a wireless connection. And, you know, if you live in a high urban area, somebody leeching off your internet, you know, you're the one, as the account holder, is going to be liable for that. So we see issues where, you know, I don't know if it's the position of the ISP to fight it. They're going to say, you know, it's on the user. But, you know, I can see a future where these copyright troll cases, they really don't go into, like, main litigation. They usually settle out. But, you know, eventually there's going to be a few cases where it goes further out, and the real issue is going to be, is it the consumer's duty to protect their wireless and make sure people don't hack into it? And I think that raises privacy issues because if it's the ISPs that will do that, you know, let me kind of rephrase that. You know, if it's the ISP, maybe the privacy issues aren't there. But if it's related to the person, they might say, forget about it. And then all of a sudden they get named in a lawsuit.
Or it's your fault you didn't protect your network. Well, that sort of gets to my next question. Jonathan, you work a lot with small content creators, and you're actively policing copyrights daily. How has, just from the recent uprisings involving copyright, what's the general attitude of people like you and individuals and content creators on the web?
Well, as you pointed out, I work with exclusively smaller content creators, individual bloggers, independent musicians, et cetera, et cetera. I don't work with any large clients. I think the largest business I work with has 10 employees. I keep it that way on purpose. I like working and helping the little guys. But there's a real sense of frustration in this circle. I mean, because it feels like there's these two behemoths. You've got the AA's, the movie studios, these mega corporations on one side, and you know the rampant piracy and these issues on the other side. They feel kind of caught in the crossfire because they're wanting to explore the internet. They're wanting to try new business models. And they don't want to do things like the trolling lawsuits. They think that's just as disgusting as the people who are getting the lawsuits. They're very much in the camp of, you know, we want reasonable copyright, but they don't feel like they're getting a voice or a seat at the table in the conversation. An issue that comes up a lot is the cost of copyright litigation these days. It takes, you know, by my estimation and by several lawyers I've talked to, it takes at least $10,000 to even really consider filing a copyright lawsuit. Unless you've got all your absolutely everything in a row. I mean, it can sometimes get in cheaper, but it's very, very expensive to file a lawsuit. And that's one of the reasons why the damages are so god-awful high in a lot of cases. And there's been a huge push among smaller content creators. This includes the ASMP, the American Society of Media Photographers. I spoke with them last year. They have a huge push for what is known as a copyright small claims court. An idea where you can take those more trivial disputes. You put my video on BitTorrent and it got downloaded a few times. Maybe that's not a case that deserves $150,000, but then maybe there should be some way of resolving the dispute, some way of enforcing that copyright that doesn't bankrupt the creator and also doesn't bankrupt the person who did the infringement. It's a more fair system because the copyright system we have now was developed in an era of big media. It was developed for big publishers, big music producers, big people with big money and big suits and big cigars and big bellies, and just get the image. And it's not the media we have today.
Tell me how you really feel.
Yeah, you're welcome. And so we have this very democratized media today where the media is you, me, and John McGee. It's us. And we don't have the money to defend our copyrights in court, and we don't have the money to defend ourselves if we're sued. We're just kind of left out to dry on both sides. And the smaller content creators are very frustrated. They're very happy about DMCA takedown notices. They're very happy they have some lever they can use. But they would like to have a bigger seat at the table, especially if this is the way media is going. They feel they should have a larger voice, and it's very frustrating for them.
I completely agree. Do you think that sometimes ISPs, and David, you work for a lot of internet companies, do you think that there's sort of this push and this trend, and maybe it's been a long time trend, toward making your business model, your privacy policy, and how you handle your users in such a way that instead of engaging with your users and maybe actively policing copyright infringement, instead you purposefully ignore it so that you'll fall under the DMCA? I mean, I know that's a question that...
the answer...
Is there any kind of push like that?
The answer to that is no, and honestly, I would run screaming away from any push to do that.
To do that.
Can we see
this,
that?
This whole, I think that this whole issue of forcing intermediaries into this debate is quite honestly just threatens the creative internet as a whole. Do you say to AT&T, I'm sorry, you need to start monitoring every single
right.
telephone call just in case somebody's going to say something illegal? I mean, forcing internet providers, hosts, firewall providers, everyone in the ecosystem to start monitoring this because a bunch of people are behaving like two-year-olds is not the right answer. I mean,
It's a
huge waste of resources. Quite honestly, I think in this whole debate, the rhetoric needs to get amped down some. First of all, I think no offense to the copyright holders here, copyright holders are behaving like babies. They're just it's all about mine. And it reminds me a lot of the linking and framing debates from, you know, the turn of the century, where people felt like you couldn't link to people's posts, you couldn't frame them, and all of a sudden now we have all these businesses that have created these great business models that include that. So that's one thing. And the other aspect of it is we need to start actually using legal terms to define these things. It's not theft. It's infringement. And until we start actually using the legal terms to define what's going on, we're just going to end up just butting heads constantly. So that's kind of my little soapbox.
So the real question that I was supposed to ask you, I kind of flew that out. I threw out a question, and he handled it perfectly. Is copyright law broken? And do you think that there's any common ground between the big IP and the internet companies?
So I don't think the copyright law is broken. I think that copyright law can be modified to handle new technology. One of the things that I think needs to be done, and this is this kind of goes to your point, is that figuring out how rights work and how rights holders should be compensated, that needs to be streamlined. So you don't have issues where, like you have with the recording industries, where one set of rights is compensated higher than another set of rights just because it's being streamed. I mean, that's ridiculous, and that needs to be changed. Is there any common ground between big IP and everybody else? I think that there's common ground between your clients and the internet. I think where there's not common ground is between the intermediaries who, for the last 50 years, have built business models kind of profiting off of your clients and kind of running interference. I think that that's where there might not be common ground. Is there common ground with the MPAA? There's not common ground with the MPAA if they keep screaming like chickens with their heads cut off.
So do you think their battle is better fought with legislation or with technology?
Whose battle?
Not the battle, but maybe finding that common ground. Is that better done through legislation or through technology?
I think it would be better done through technology than more legislation.
You answered right. All right, so Patrick, you are one of the few people that I know who manages online communities, and in doing so, that I personally know that manages online communities, but you're also one of the few that actually pays attention to what their users are posting and sort of polices things. So what do you think the responsibility of the online publications, the online communities, the social sites, what responsibility do they have to ensure that their services and spaces don't become havens for copyright infringement?
So I see, first of all, there's more than a few of us who keep an eye on these issues. but
you actively...
Right.
You actively do it. You don't ignore what's being done on your site.
Sure. So one of the things that I see that comes up that bothers me personally, as someone who manages a community, in my view, responsibly, is that I like the DMCA, but I see people that hide behind it, where they will ignore anything, even if they know they shouldn't have it, until the moment they receive a notification. They'll suck in every last search visitor, every page view, every last ad dollar until the moment they receive a notification. So if someone comes to your community or comes to your service and they post a Batman movie, you know, chances are you're not supposed to have that. There are some common sense areas where you can know that you shouldn't have something. When I have a user on one of my communities who goes from having no vocabulary at all to all of a sudden having this verbose, well-written article that looks like it came from ESPN, I Google a sentence and, oh, it came from ESPN. You know, it's a miracle. So I think that being proactive with your spaces is a good thing and doing what you can. I'm a big advocate of doing what you can. And, you know, another thing I see with community spaces is hiding behind linking instead of hosting. We don't host the file, we just link to it, so it's totally okay. It really depends on what you want to be and what you want to be taken as. I mean, there's not a whole lot of difference perception-wise between a community that hosts massive copyright infringement and a community that links to it, as far as perception is concerned, as far as how people look at you. So I'm a big fan of proactive management and believe it should be a priority, and that comes in guidelines, it comes in terms of service, certainly, but also applying those guidelines and those terms of service and hiring community managers or moderators or people who monitor what is being shared on your space. You can view everything. I totally understand that. But, you know, you can at least use samples of content. And something, you know, that, for example, like a file hosting service could do is you're able to find out what the most downloaded things of the day are, you know, the top 100, whatever it may be. You're able to take a look at what is driving traffic, and you're able to see, you know, if those are things that appear to be content that you should have or shouldn't have. And if you're aware of things that shouldn't be there, then I think you should take advantage of that situation and that knowledge and clean your site up. And there's moderation tools out there. You know, you can certainly set up your own sort of filters, but having a report system is a simple thing to do. Not DMCA reports, but reports from users who can point something out to you and help you to maintain a responsible space. Some of the things that have gotten some of the file hosting companies in trouble have been incentivizing uploads, you know, and paying people for uploading content. And then when the content turns out not to be legitimate, do they still get paid? How does that work? I mean, instead you could incentivize accurate reports, content that actually gets taken down. So encourage people to help you manage that volume. I don't think it's enough to say, this site's so big, I'm going to throw my hands up and not do anything. I don't think that's a good and responsible way to manage the space. And, you know, there are tools out there as well to identify content like Vobel that will identify audio and video content with people that use that service. And so the bottom line for me is, if you are not ready to properly manage your social space or online community or public-facing upload service, whatever it may be, you know, don't launch one. If you have the resources to display ads and cash checks, I think you have the resources to pay some attention at least to monitoring how people are using your service and ensuring that it fits in with legitimate usage. Thoughts?
I think we've all kind of gone on to YouTube and looked for a video and it's been removed because it's against the terms of service, things like that. Some of the larger ones are doing that. I mean, usually that's in response to some of the technology that the big IP has come up with. But definitely, and I actually have a follow-up. So do you think that the DMCA discourages proactivity in that way specifically?
I think that I like the DMCA because I think it gives life to a lot of good ideas. I just don't like when people use it as a crutch, that's all, and think it comes in place of your own terms of service, your own guidelines, your own management. It's there to protect you for people who use your space and, you know, you're not aware of it or, you know, minor infringement on a much larger space. That's where it really protects people and provides safe harbor. If you use it as a means of just, I'm not going to do anything until I receive a notice, I think that's, you know, poor management, and I think it's waiting for, for something to happen, something bad to happen.
So I have a question for the group.
Uh-oh.
Since we have a lot of time left, we're going quickly through our topics.
That's okay.
So do you think that can you justify, can somebody who's going out there and downloading, like a normal user downloading or streaming unlicensed content, do you think that you can justify that by saying that the copyright holder's business model is broken? Like, is the music industry's business model broken, so they're to blame for my infringement?
Personally, I don't think so. The reason I believe that is because if you believe the music industry or the movie industry's business model is broken, there are plenty of people out there who are trying different business models, and you can enjoy their content and support them. I mean, Netflix, iTunes, Spotify... You know, these are all services that didn't exist just, you know, 10 years ago, we'll say, in this case, because I threw iTunes in there like an idiot. 5 years ago, if you eliminate iTunes. But so we're seeing a huge push forward there. And just simply saying the business model's broken and then pirating or downloading illegally what you want, that doesn't help anything. The only way new business models are going to take hold, the only way we're going to move forward with these better ideas and better business models is if people put dollars behind them and support them. So rather than downloading illegally the latest Batman movie or whatever, maybe you should legally stream in on Hulu or whatever some other movie. I mean, I think that's the only way we're going to see, because until money changes hands, big content's not going to listen.
I like that.
So, I mean, I kind of agree with you, but I think that, you know, if you're putting money into Hulu, you're really just putting money into big content's hands. I mean, that's Hulu is not a new technology.
But they're gonna see that's the stream, that's the future, and that's the way they need to go.
But that's a nice business model.
I got that, mm-hmm. and I understand that. But the issue is, big content needs to stop running roughshod over needs to stop treating technology and technology infringement the way the U.S. government treats the drug war. There has to be opportunities for companies to develop new businesses without having to pay ransom for content, or to be able to use content in new ways that might be on the fringes of existing law, but actually are legal and accepted uses of content. I don't think that, for example, the music industry has picked a winner with Spotify, and that model is going to...
Oh, it's Spotify, Rhapsody, RDO, Last.fm. I mean, they didn't pick a winner. They've partnered with a lot of companies, actually, and I think they've all done very different and very innovative things in their space.
But the hoops, for example, that Spotify had to jump through were just enormous.
Yeah, and I agree. That's a problem with the industry. They have to lower those barriers of entry. I completely agree with that. And that's something I hope they work on. And a lot of that's that archaic licensing structure that's been around for the past, God knows how many, probably 100 years at this point. Right. It's been building out.
So not to be a lawyer and not answer the question.
I'll do that later.
I didn't even notice.
To answer the question, no, you know, it's not an excuse to... It's not an excuse. But the flip side of that is that the content industry and those people who are opposing it, there needs to be some flexibility for them.
Great.
My thought on the business model thing is that I always, and maybe it's not fair, but... You know, if you were smart enough to say it's broken, maybe you were smart enough to come up with a new one. You know, if you can come up with the next big business model, I'm sure people would love to make as much money as they used to or are now. So put it out there and pitch an idea.
And I agree.
There we're fixing the problem through creating new business models, creating new technology, instead of putting out, you know, horribly arcane copyright laws and trying to use that.
I think the licensing is what Jonathan was kind of referring to, but I don't know how it's going to be tough to change that, especially in music with the way, you know, songwriters and the artists performing rights and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
And I know in the European Union they're making a push to streamline licensing for exactly this purpose, but I'm the Saints will win the Super Bowl again before. I can't use that line anymore. It didn't work as well.
I'm a Cubs fan, so we can use it.
Okay. But it's going to be a cold day in hell before we see that in the U.S. in the current climate.
Well, my take on it, I guess I'm a pessimist when it comes to copyright law and something that David touched upon. I think technology and innovation in fighting the piracy, instead of crazy laws like what they were proposing in SOPA and PIPA, is the way to go. And maybe I just love history too much, but like historically there's always been copyright issues. And the fear in this century was back in the day, like Charles Dickens was upset, like, In the 1800s, his books were being pirated on the streets of New York on a cheap printing press. When people could get a better printing press, you know, read the materials better, they went and bought that. You know, historically in the copyright legal community, when there was Beta and VHS, like they thought that was going to be the end of like the entertainment industry. When DAT's recordings, they thought that was going to be the end of it. There's always room for innovation, and that's going to, you know, it's going to, I think, better protect people than copyright laws. I mean, the 1976 Copyright Act, I mean, it's so outdated. And even when the DMCA was passed, you know, people are saying it's outdated. Law just can't catch up with technology.
Part of it's so hard to pass any law, you know. Especially,
yeah, well, I mean,
it's. I don't know if the DMCA would pass today, you know.
No, I agree. I mean,
we'd be anti-DMCA. People would be anti-DMCA.
The DMCA blackout.
You know,
well, Wikipedia goes dark.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it was so easy for them to pass the DMCA. I don't think it would have been so easy to come to some well-structured document like that.
Well, I mean, the thing about the DMCA is we need to realize that the DMCA wasn't passed on its own. It was part of the implementation of
the Weinberg Treaty. Yeah.
Right. So I have another question for David. So what does traditional customs law, what place does that have in IP infringement?
So, I mean, one of the the things that I do is I represent one of the domain names that was seized in operation in our sites. And so customs law was used as a way to seize that domain name. And right now, just, you know, we haven't heard from Immigration and Customs Enforcement about this domain name for 3.5 months. They've stopped returning our calls, and this has gone on for 1.5 years. So what place does it say? Should it have? I say none. It's the case law that the Justice Department, the IPR Center, and ICE is using for these seizures is based on the seizures of counterfeit goods in flea markets. I mean, this is just complete stretch of what of the case law, and it's not applicable to the technology that's being used now. And also, the other aspect of it is driving businesses away from the U.S. So after the operation in our sites seizures, I have one client who saw a 20% decrease in the next month in foreign requests for services. This is a company, a huge company in Texas, and people are just running away from the U.S. because our laws are being used in this manner. I don't have a particular position on Mega Upload, but Mega Upload is another example.
So does anybody have a response for that or want to respond to something they didn't get to?
No, with the Mega Upload, and I just read today that the U.S. extradited a student in the U.K. on copyright issues, infringement. And, you know, I was kind of surprised with Mega Upload because, you know, especially since, you know, September 11th, I mean, the crimes that the federal government prosecute related to IP is really, really small. And usually there's some type of terrorism aspect to it. If, you know, if there's counterfeiters who are funneling the money to terrorism, that's when they'll go at it. So I'm surprised that they went, you know, criminally after Mega Upload, especially when there could be a good DMCA defense. But what Patrick brings up is, you know people sometimes use the DMCA as a crutch, and you know the Ninth Circuit in California, their rulings, even if you should be aware of infringement, that might not be enough for a copyright holder to prevail. And we have the Second Circuit, the Viacom YouTube case, which is on appeal and pending, may move DMCA law in another direction because it's all over the place. I mean, it's mostly in California and New York, but there is really it's new law. I mean, it takes years before law settles. I don't know what's going to happen in the future.
And this highlights the problem with the law keeping up with the technology right here. I mean, the DMCA was passed in 98, and it's 2012 or 14 years later, and we're just now getting the first good appellate court rulings on this that are really useful. So, I mean, this highlights that problem, I think, very nicely.
And they're just now talking about addressing mass copyright infringement from overseas websites when some of us, not me, are already in the habit of using that as their where they get their media consumption from. And this touches on various issues that were in each of your responses. Customs law, it's the wrong vehicle. It was made for, like you said, fighting counterfeit purses and things in flea markets. What about the policing tactics? Do you think that putting wiretaps on what I'm streaming or what's coming in from a large content provider? Do you think that is heavy-handed? I mean, there are other IP related crimes where you can get a wiretap, like corporate espionage, trade secret theft, things like that. But usually, you're looking at you're wiretapping two wrongdoers, where here it's us, the consumer, and the criminal. So does anybody have sort of a thought about that?
I guess my pessimistic view is, you know, copyright law and infringement it's not absolute liability. Like, you know, if you download something and you don't know, you might not be liable, but it's strict liability. So it, you know, that may not be available defense. I didn't know that this wasn't, you know, I thought I had the right to do that. And I think, you know, if somebody's going to push like what Katie said, they're going to use the argument, copyright infringement, strict liability. You should know better. Like,
But criminal copyright infringement is, you know, there's a high bar. It has to be met on a scale.
I thought you were saying civil.
No, criminal.
My bad.
But they do, the thing is, they are talking about sharing the results of their investigations with the rights holder. So presumably, if there's an IP address attached to that those results, then your identity is also going to the rights holder. So yeah, I do think it has an impact on civil. It may have an impact on civil.
At least theoretically.
Theoretically.
So, I mean, my thoughts on that is that just from an attorney perspective, an infrastructure perspective.
A technical perspective.
That's just scary to me that there might be wiretaps. But the bigger question, I think the thing that's missing here is, has there actually been a societal discussion about how important this is to us as a society? Okay, so now we're using customs law to seize domain names, killing people's businesses. We're extraditing people from New Zealand for infringing. And we're putting wiretaps to look for copyright infringement. Is this really what society wants? Is this what we want our police power to be used for? And I think that discussion, we haven't had that discussion as a society. It needs to happen.
How do we start that discussion?
It's a tough discussion to start because up until 25 years ago, the commoner had no reason to know about copyright law. If you weren't working in a newspaper, you weren't working at a television station or had a printing press in your backyard constantly churning out pirated books, you had no reason to think twice about copyright law. It wasn't your thing. It wasn't a law that would affect you. And today, all of a sudden, everyone's a publisher. And now it's not just copyright law, truth be told. It's privacy law. Mm-hmm. Any area that was previously defined as mass media law now governs your life. You're on the internet. Congratulations. Hit the books. That's basically kind of the memo we got.
I mean, who would have ever thought that there would be, you know, riots in Europe about ACTA? I mean, who's going to riot over copyright law? I mean, that's just amazing stuff.
No, that's what I feel. Nobody's dying. It's a song that was downloaded from the internet. I mean, I feel the same way. But that sort of my is there any interest in protecting the common good and just treating each other's content like with respect, treating each other with respect, not filing frivolous lawsuits just to push your business model? I mean, how do we? Is that just a public interest message? Like how do we get that message out? How do we push that forward?
Well, I mean, I think to some extent it's been pushed forward a little bit with the protests over SOPA and PIPA. I mean, I think that, you know, everybody's grandma is now aware, at least to some extent, with the internet blackouts, that this is an issue, and I do think that there's some awareness of it, and that's it might. Cause because of the confrontations between internet businesses and the content industry, it might actually cause some discussion. You know, am I hopeful that it's going to be a presidential issue? Yeah, not so much, but you know, it might be a little bit.
I mean, so thing that about this discussion is that, and you know, hosting a copyright related podcast and talking about that topic, and then having SOPA and PIPA and whatnot pop up is that. While more people may be aware of a copyright issue, it doesn't necessarily mean any more people are really informed about that issue. And so you have, you know, in many cases, companies on both sides representing interests. I don't necessarily believe there's white knights on either side. Everyone has interests to represent. Google, the RAA, movie studio, search engines. Everyone has their own personal commercial interests. And so when they pass a message on, you know, you get a lot of the, I don't want to say sheep, but, you know, if I'm a politician and I know this website is just letting people enter their name and they hit a form, they don't even read the letter they're sending. like, how much value can you actually place in that? And then this issue, really, at its core, it's an issue for everybody when privacy rights and access to the internet and whatnot is discussed, but you're talking about protecting the rights of what is a probably a vast minority of people who have commercially valuable copyrighted stuff that is they actually want to defend. So it's kind of a rights of a minority type of issue. So if you let the average person walking in the street weigh in, there was a study, 90% of people don't know what a web browser is. So how, you know, how informed can people get to actually be able to you know, have a reasoned solution to this problem? And I don't even include myself in that. You know, I think there are much smarter people than me who probably need to hash this out. But I recognize with all the noise that I saw in my Twitter stream, my Facebook page, especially about SOPA and PIPA, and then talking with people about the issue and figuring out that they really didn't understand the greater details of it. They just passed on a message that someone else told them to send out. So to me, that's a challenge to having, you know, any sort of reasonable public discussion on this topic.
And I think there's a lot of misinformation in copyright to follow what Patrick said. What I love when you, you know, see somebody on YouTube and they're streaming a video and the user who put it on there, this is fair use, and all they did was invert the video. That's not fair use. And
no copyright infringement intended.
Right.
Or I don't own anything.
Or go 30 seconds ahead. It's, you know, this bypasses like copyright infringement laws. And I think, you know, even the court systems don't really know what fair use is. I mean, they have the four factors that's in the statute, but, you know, that's, I mean, fair use.
Then you have the
around.
Big fifth factor, how much they like you, right?
Well, yeah. And it's a defense, too. You don't get to it.
Yeah.
Right away,
yeah.
But and some of the new cases that have come out, the judge actually looked at fair use initially.
And yeah, we're seeing that more and more in DMCA law. Actually, people who file DMCAs are now obliged to take fair use into consideration before filing. So
right, and I think you know mm-hmm. with social media, you know, there's a whole social culture out there where you know, a lot of it is, you know, you're taking what somebody did and making it something different. And is that fair use or is that infringement? I mean, if we say that it's infringement, it's going to hurt a lot of social culture. If we say that it's fine, copyright holders, do they lose out? It's a tough question.
Yeah, there has to be, I mean, you know, obviously there's no set, there's the factors and whatnot, but I mean, I write a music blog in addition to running communities. And so that's, you know, music blogs are perhaps one of the bigger areas being targeted by some of these initiatives. And I write a hip-hop music blog specifically. And, you know, I will say that running across many of the larger hip-hop blogs, I can instantly see things that I say, I would not do that. Like, screen ripping is very common. Like, they rip off an award ceremony, you know, like the MTV Awards, let's say, and have it up in, like, 5 minutes. Like, you don't even necessarily, like, they could post it online maybe right away, but you didn't even give them 5 minutes to actually put the content on their website, and then it's ripped, it's up on YouTube for a limited amount of time, and then of course MP3 sharing, you know, a lot of the sites just don't have editorial standards at all, and it's really about traffic, the quick moment, the retweet right now to get those ad dollars, and you know, maybe customs and all that isn't the way to go about it, I don't disagree there, but you know, looking at some of those domain names in the operation in our sites list, I saw some sites that I knew that were doing these things for years. And again, not the right way to go about it, but in an ideal world, we'd all be responsible and not do that. But
do you think
that
makes it harder for people who are legitimately?
Well, it's definitely a competitive disadvantage for me not to post screen rips and not to just post an MP3 from anywhere. Like, I miss out on traffic. I recognize that. But we have editorial standards in place, and we follow them. And so, you know, if that means that I cannot post that VH1 Awards performance right now, then we don't embed it. We don't have the embed. If we have to link somewhere or we're just reporting on what happened, that's the way it is. If we don't have the MP3 that just leaked, that's the way it is. We share the music that comes from the artists and comes from the labels. And although that's not 100% foolproof, most of the time it is. And it's a reasonable defense to say that this came from the artist, this came from this specific person. Again, not foolproof, but pretty darn good and better than just some anonymous form.
You did what you could do to make sure that it
right,
was
right.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, that's not even a reasonable defense. I mean, some of the domain names that were seized in operation in our sites, that the content had been given to them by the labels themselves.
Yeah, I'm aware of some of the sites saying that. I would wonder what the actual breakdown is between. And I'm not saying that everyone caught up in that was should have been taken down. I'm not saying that's the right way, but I do know some of the sites in that list, and I do know some of them, you know, had the appearance of doing some shady things, and not to say that I know their business, because I don't, but me personally, I would be interested in just beyond taking their word for it, knowing, you know, what percentage of content they actually posted that came from the label. And if that's the case, I'll be the first to support them and get behind them in you know, speaking out about this. But it's tough with a lot of these sites, and especially with hip-hop blogs, where it is very prevalent, for better or for worse.
So if there's any kind of reply that you want to make to each other, it's kind of time for taking questions from the audience. So,
yes, of course. That sounds wonderful. No, I don't.
We should go to their house and
yes.
beat them immediately.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. And again, I'm not defending ICE or that method. You know, but that's not to paint all music blogs as totally great either. And even the ones that might follow DMCA notices will still the next day post something they got from who knows where. And is that okay? It's not to me. How do you deal with that? That's the challenge. I don't think they should just be taken offline with no notice, and that's a problem with operation in our sites. I don't believe it should just happen and you not know.
I think
absolutely
the challenge
not.
Is we're acknowledging that the way it was handled was wrong, but we don't know what the right way is. That's kind of the acknowledgement.
Well, the right way definitely includes notification.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, well, that's my opinion. And our opinion probably shared. Yeah. You know, you need to be absolutely. Aware of it, need to be aware of, you know, the venue through which you can contest it.
And the U.S. government should send it in the form of a rap battle.
But that's not just for copyright either, though. I mean, that's for other forms of law and other things that may come up where you run afoul. Everyone needs to be notified of what they've done.
I saw you first.
I'd like to hear from the lawyers on the panel whether Mr. O'Keefe is putting himself in legal jeopardy by policing his
network.
I was ready for that. Go, attorneys.
We did discuss that a little bit, and you're saying, okay, is he now not subject to the DMCA?
I'll go first, and I'll just do it in hypothetical so you can't sue me for malpractice.
Sure. I have no money. Don't worry about it.
I mean,
those are the worst plaintiffs.
And I think the attorneys will agree here. Whenever you start a duty on your, you know, by policing it, you're creating a duty upon yourself. And so somebody might say, well, you didn't do this well enough. You started, you didn't finish, or you didn't do it well enough. You're liable, but hopefully you could still fall back on the DMCA. If you're following the steps there and being proactive, I would hope that you know, you wouldn't be held liable. But like I was talking earlier, DMCA law is not settled yet.
And give it another 14 years. We might have an answer for you.
You seem to be suggesting that you would have the ability to control.
Me? No. No.
Well, to an extent. Just because...
My point is you see something...
You're not
you
omniscient.
You know it's not okay. You can take care of it. Next attorney. Sorry.
So I would actually move this out of the DMCA, and I would look at the Communications Decency Act.
Yep.
And that's what I would use for my analysis. And... You know, the CDA is pretty clear about this issue. You know, to your point about policing and DMCA, there is a lot of sites are not very well advised, which is not a great thing. But you know, the lawyers cost money. There are
you do. I thought you were all a chair.
That's an understatement. Damn.
I'm the Walmart of lawyers. Which is very true.
You just said that.
I know.
We love you anyway.
But you know, there are you can get outside the safe harbor by not having a repeat infringer policy. How you interpret your repeat infringer policy, and it's not to say that one of my clients hosts one of the music blogs that is. We get a lot of those notices. There, you really need to look at the content of them, and it does involve a little bit of thinking. I agree with you to that point.
And one thing
I think if the scale of your site is so large, then it's very hard. I have a client who runs a forum on bodybuilding that has millions of pages, millions of strings, and he doesn't. Sometimes he'll time them out and close the threads, but I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh, and one thing, I mean, and the other attorneys may agree. I mean, if somebody comes up to you and like, hey, I hate the site, but you're showing that you're showing some type of initiative, hopefully there'd be a way to work it out. I mean, it's a lot of times you see when somebody's ignoring it or using the DMCA as a crutch, we're like, I have to now litigate. And, you know, I think it's always better to settle and work it out without the courts.
I mean, there's the old adage about 99% of all legal disputes get settled before they ever see a court. You want to be in that 99.
Right.
You want to be
yeah.
the 99%.
I appreciate the free legal advice. Because I know I couldn't afford you guys otherwise. Except you, Jonathan. I can afford you. So I have two thoughts, because I figured this would come up. So my first thought is that me personally, speaking as me running my websites and what I think might happen, so totally off base probably, but that's what I feel comfortable doing. And I feel that's more defensible. Is that if I'm trying the best that I can, doing the best that I can in my space, and I can prove that I have taken down things that I've seen, I think that's a more reasonable position to be in than I don't remove anything except if I receive a DMC notice. That's just me personally. That seems like a more reasonable position that I can live with. And the other thing is that this panel is not necessarily to talk about what is now, but what could be also. I think we've touched on that a little bit, where it needs to go. And me personally, I don't like the idea of people who do proactively manage their spaces, you know, being vilified or losing safe harbor because they do proactively do something beyond what is just simply legally required of them.
Yeah, and why do you get punished for being a good
so
citizen?
If it's good. Yeah, if that's good the case right now, then I'm saying I'd like that to be changed. Please, legal people, do that. Thank you.
So do we have any other questions? I saw Brian first.
Right, especially if they have the resources. Like Pinterest has $37.5 million in funding, they could, you know, take a look at some things.
Yeah, I mean, there's a way, like you said, if you can find out a way to accept money and do all these million transactions, there's also a way to use yourself. So I think that's a cop-out that people don't do it because it's too much volume. Yeah, there's a lot of volume, and I think you're responsible. You have to be responsible and operate it. The other side of it, sort of going down that, I guess, a little bit further too, is I'm always struck by the individuals who download all that content, and there's got to be responsibility there. And that's a good point, maybe about education. And I don't know the best way to do that. It almost seems reasonable. And somebody who doesn't do that and never really has, it just seems reasonable to me that the average consumer would say, I have to pay for that. And the fact that I'm getting it for free, a reasonable person would understand that.
Well,
they're setting yourself up there, sir. Sorry.
Well,
No, not at all.
That's a legal term.
But it just seems like, you know, you've got to pick up the movies, you've got to pay iTunes and Amazon and all that. Doesn't it strike you that you then have to go around all that?
I call it the no duh argument. No duh. I mean, of course you have to pay for it.
That's how it sort of strikes me. And I don't know if it's just, is it that people just sort of ignore that and they go, yeah, but I can get access to it, so I'm gonna? Or do you really think that people are not educated?
It's only no duh if you know it, right?
Yeah.
And
I
think Mr. Sneed David had a
Are people just ignoring it?
I think they ignore it and then they plead ignorance. Some people ignore it, plead ignorance, and then I have talked to people, and I won't use names, who tell me that they didn't know that downloading content from a torrent was copyright infringement, what they were downloading. I'm like, if you're smart enough to use BitTorrent, like, you're a hacksaw and you know these issues, so I don't know. Because I've never done that.
So can I make a comment just on one of your prior points, and it's this issue of monitoring content, and that comes up a lot, and it came up at the State of the Net conference in January. There's a whole panel on people, how should intermediaries monitor content? One of the things that concerns me about that is that it is actually kind of expensive, but you end up with the people at the very top of the food chain being able to afford that expense, and it just destroys the whole bottom part of the creative internet, because these companies might not be able to afford implement those stuff. Your guys, yeah. Well, I mean, I hear all the time from some of my clients, it's either spend some money with you or buy another server. Well, you know, it is a little bit disconcerting that there's that choice that has to go on sometimes.
And to touch on his other point about, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Did I?
No, I'm done.
Okay.
There was applause during the point. I think it went pretty well.
Excuse me.
You know,
the other room is clapping for him. To touch on why people do it, I don't think there's one single reason. I stood in line for a party a couple nights ago, and I was talking to a diehard member of the United States Pirate Party. That was a very interesting 30 minutes of my life, I'll be honest. But it was fascinating to talk to this guy, and I'm not going to name names because I don't remember it. And I'll be honest here.
From your memory.
But I did get his card. But basically, he admitted there's various motivations and various people in the movie. There are some people that say, screw all the artists and damn them all to hell and so forth. And there are some that say, oh, we're only against the big guys, the double A's, and so forth. And then there is the ignorant ones. You know, you can't lump everyone who downloads content into one big, file and say that's the reason. There's some people who do it out of convenience. There's some people who do it out of stupidity. There's some people who do it out of spite. And there are some people who do it just because it's habit.
There are some people who are 10 years old and snuck into their...
I'm 12 years old. What is this?
Office.
This triple X.
I know it happens to people.
If you're going down the freeway at 100 miles an hour, I really don't care why you did it.
Yeah.
Right? There's some way to communicate that. There's some way...
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of things there. I think also to speak to Jonathan, not everyone's the same, and I don't think it's necessarily any more right, but obviously in some the availability of content in certain countries will vary wildly from here. So maybe they don't have that legitimate channel, and I'm not saying that's okay. I'm just saying that's maybe a little more understandable. And also, it's just so easy, right? Yeah. I mean, going down the road at 100 miles an hour, I see cops when I drive. I don't know about the rest of you, but where I drive, there's usually police officers. And if they saw me driving 100 miles, they would pull me over. This is happening way too frequently, and it's way too easy.
Right, and I think people think they're not – one motivation is I'm not going to get caught. And, you do have these troll cases, and when I spoke to innovation by, new business models, there's also innovation in circumventing copyright law.
Right.
And, people, they don't think they're going to get caught, or oh, I wasn't going to buy this movie anyway.
A man once said the code is the law. My answer to that is that, if you're going around, downloading content, or you're just a Joe Schmo person doing that, that's something that you're doing in the privacy of your own home. There are some that say you have a First Amendment right to be anonymous when you're surfing the internet. So your presence on the internet is a First Amendment.
And one other thing,
right? More to that is so monitoring my use of the internet, that's a privacy issue. Policing me while I'm driving down the street, that's not a privacy issue. I'm in public. I'm speeding. I'm gonna run over somebody or. I think it's a different issue.
Well, and like I was about to say, one other thing to think about is think back to the Model A. I mean, the first speeding ticket ever handed out was for a guy going 8 miles an hour. And that was, I think, 75 years ago. I mean, we've had a long, long time to reach this point where we understand what driving. It took a lot of history here. Cars evolved very slowly compared to the internet. We went from, internet to this massive speed lane we have today in under a decade. And so we haven't developed those social norms. A lot of it's just time.
So can I ask you a question, Kate?
Sure. We have a minute left.
Okay. So is it a privacy issue if my client agrees to monitor someone's internet access? So they're in their own home downloading whatever they're downloading. My client's in Houston.
Did they agree to the terms of service?
They agreed to the terms of service.
I mean, what does the terms of service say? I think there is sort of a blurry area there, because there's other things going on, but those other things are not legislation. Those things are user agreements, and so.
Okay, raise your hands if you read the terms of service on everything that you sign up for. Oh, shut up.
Kevin.
Kevin, put your hand down.
Kevin D's. At Kevin D's. Sweet him now. No.
All right. So, I mean, that's it. Thank you so much for coming. And I very much thank my esteemed panelists. It was really...